Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSR HealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
Margaret McCall, you're listening to Business Life Works, the show that guides you and coaches you on using the harmonic matching process to create a fulfilling life. If you would like to know more about the harmonic matching process, then please go to my website, bhcld.com, or just look up my name, Margaret McCall, and you will find my website and my books. Today we have a guest, Steve Williams. Steve, are you there?
I'm here, Margaret. How are you?
Wonderful. I'm great. I'm great. The sun is shining, and it's always a wonderful day. Rain, shine, I'm just glad to wake up and have my eyes see the world around me. So we're good. We're good. So Steve Williams is an author of 6 books, and so let me give a little intro about what we're going to talk about today, and then we'll talk about Steve's bio, and we'll get right into some questions. The title of the show is What History's Most Notorious Leaders Can Teach Us About Success. The long-held conventional belief in the business world is that leadership can only be learned from positive role models. However, Steve Williams claims that we have it backward. We can learn a lot about effective leadership from the ones like Attila of the Hun, Al Capone, and Genghis Khan. Although they were ruthless, they were some of the most brilliant leaders of all time, according to Steve Williams. I want to learn more about that today, Steve. Steve can share the specific practices and tactics that made these infamous characters such effective head honchos, and how to apply these to your own success path. He is the author of 6 books, including the one we're going to talk about today, which is called Notorious Leadership Lessons from History's Most Notorious Leaders. He's also a certified leadership coach and QMS expert. You want to tell us what QMS is and where you became a QMS expert before we get into your bio, Steve?
Sure, that's a great question. If you're not in the business, that's probably a foreign term. QMS stands for Quality Management System.
Mm-hmm.
So it's basically the business processes that any company uses to run their business, covering everything from quoting through shipping. So it's basically, you can get certified to a whole variety. Many people have heard the term ISO 9000. You can get certified to a variety of quality certifications, and that's what I do. I primarily help companies get certifications and improve their internal practices.
Okay, great. Well, let me give you a little more information of Steve's bio, and then we can go from there because I have lots of questions for you. As I mentioned, he's a certified leadership consultant. Steve, you started your own consulting company in 2013, so that's like 11 years. That's good. That's great. And after you've been spending over 35 years in manufacturing leadership positions, working with companies around the world, was when you decided to set up this business, is what I understand.
Steve
is an accomplished author whose latest book, as I've mentioned, is called Notorious, Leadership Lessons from History's Most Notorious Leaders. And while writing this book, you combed through and went through in detail a lot of history books. You were researching techniques, methodologies, and strategies And I understand you've been researching them of leaders who might be considered positive, as well as leaders who are infamous, such as Al Capone, Steve Jobs, and Catherine the Great. And then what you discovered through doing this research was the reason you wrote this book. It caused you to rebrand them as some of the most brilliant leaders of all time. We might not like the things they did, but that doesn't mean that they didn't accomplish what they intended to accomplish. And I assume that's what this is all about, this whole book. So let's go forward and let's get started. What, if you had to say in just a few sentences, what you feel is some of the most important points of this book, and then we're going to delve into some questions, but what do you feel are some of the most important points, takeaways? We're going to start that in the beginning of the show, and probably wrap up with it as well.
Sure. So one of the things that I wanted to do with the book is to look at unusual places where you might find lessons and things that we could learn from people in the past that would still apply to today's business environment. And I kind of chose a different path than what you would typically find in a bookstore. You know, you've got positive role models and, you know, Jack Welch and John Maxwell and some of the people that have traditionally been the leadership experts. And I came across a book probably 15 to 20 years ago called Leadership Lessons from Attila the Hun on a business trip, and I read it on the airplane and thought, wow, there's a lot of things that this guy did that were extremely successful. And I kind of just tucked that into the back of my mind and thought, well, I'll file that later as a potential topic for maybe a book or an article or something. So it took 20 years for that to come back around, and I thought, well,
20
gosh,
years? That's great.
Yeah, it did, literally. And I thought, well, geez, if there's this one, you know, notorious or ruthless leader out there that there's positive lessons that we can learn and use in our own lives, maybe there's other ones. And that's when I started doing the research and trying to put together the cast of characters that ended up becoming part of the book.
So when you think of leadership, what you learned about leadership from some of these characters, what's different than the concept of positive leadership? What are some of the key differences that you see with the notorious leaders you've studied versus somebody who everybody agrees was positive and, you know, accomplished a lot? What's different?
Sure. I think that's a great point. The difference in my mind is that the positive role models that we typically go to for, you know, leadership training or lessons, you know, they're used to dealing with, you know, an organization where, you know, either by title or by influence, they control and get results through other people that are willing in a positive environment, right? A business or a department or a manufacturing company.
Sure.
These leaders, they were successful using techniques under very different circumstances. And I think that's the biggest difference is they weren't managing a bunch of engineers or manufacturing managers. They were managing, you know, in wartime and in battles and through, you know, running a nation in some cases, or being a pirate. And their whole business was capturing and increasing their fleet of ships and robbing and getting, you know, booty and loot and a whole different environment. So there's a big difference between managing people who want to be managed in a positive environment versus managing people in an environment where you're basically taking over another company in today's verbiage, right? You're taking a country or you're expanding your kingdom or you're adding more captured armies to your army. So it's a, you know, what I found to be one of the biggest takeaways was there's commonality between managing in both of those environments. And the lessons in the book, you know, apply to today's business environment just as well as they did, you know, 2,500 years ago in the case of Sun Tzu. The things that he did to keep a hold, manage, get everybody to buy into his vision, to execute his orders, are the same things that we would do in a Fortune 500 company or in a mom-and-pop company or some company that's providing a service. There's a commonality there, and people a lot of times have a hard time separating, well, that, you know, that was a bad person. You know, they were very ruthless. They killed a lot of people, or they had a bad reputation, and there's really nothing we can learn from them. You know, that's kind of dead wrong. You got to separate, you know, the bad things they did versus what they did to become successful in those very hostile environments. And to me, that was one of the biggest takeaways is, gosh, it, you know, something that worked for a Viking can work in today's business environment. Something that they did to keep, you know, to inspire the workforce and to inspire their crews are the same ways that we would inspire people working in our departments or our coworkers. So I found that to be extremely interesting, and that's probably the greatest takeaway out of the whole book.
So, Steve, let's talk about what the successful methods are for leadership and, you know, how you really bring people together and unite them to work for a common purpose or, you know, the common mission, the common goal. What are these successful methods? Go through that with us.
Sure. There's the book has 10 different leaders. Each leader has two lessons. And we take an example from each of the leaders' experience for whatever the lesson is we're talking about. And then I also add in a example from my personal leadership journey that kind of illustrates whether I did well with this lesson, I was successful, or I failed. Going all the way back to the very beginning of the book, the first leader is Sun Tzu. And, you know, he was a military strategist back 2,500 years ago. And you think about, he had some of the greatest armies in history, and he realized that no matter how good he was, he couldn't do it by himself. So he was probably one of the very first leader in history to start thinking about succession plans and team building and things like that. So he built his success on recognizing who the potential new leaders could be in his armies. And he would take over other armies. And one of the interesting things was he was not afraid to learn from the competition. If he would capture an opposing force, he would have no problem bringing them in to his fold, promoting some of the leaders from the other, you know, tribe or crew, and putting them in leadership positions within his own armies and learning from, you know, maybe they did things better than some of the things he was doing. So he was very big on talent management and coming up with kind of a hierarchy, like a span of control, probably the first leader to also think about things like span of control. So he operated on a power of 10. So there were 10 very high-level generals that reported directly to him. And then each of those generals had, you know, 10 sub-generals. And then it would get down to, you know, the hundreds in the army. And he would break them into, you know, like what we would call a battalion in our military or something like that, where, you know, everybody had a reporting structure. And he would focus on building bench strength. And he would task each one of his generals to mentor the next the next group of leaders to take over should something happen to the current leader, either through, you know, a battle where they lose them in battle, or they die, you know, they didn't really retire back then, but they were no longer available. And who's the next man to step up or woman to step up? So he did a lot of things like building high-impact teams and understanding that culture is a big consideration when you're building a team, that the team has to function cohesively. And, I mean, 2,500 years ago, that was pretty much unheard of. He was one of the first people to think about succession, span of control, and, you know, getting success through smaller, more effective teams.
Okay, this whole team building process, that's pretty...
Absolutely. And you know, right now, you could go out and, you know, you could find a million people that do team building training, and some of the foundational lessons and techniques they use today, Sun Tzu was doing 2,500 years ago. So it just shows you that there's really nothing new. It's just kind of reimagined and reinvented as we go through history.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Interesting. Well, then, how about leading fearlessly? I know you talk about that in your book as well. You have two lessons from Attila the Hun. Let's talk about that.
Sure. Attila the Hun, he was, you know, obviously another military figure, and one of the lessons in the book is be decisive in your actions. And that is such a critical part of being a great leader. Big difference between being a good leader and a great leader. And being able to make an adjustment on the fly and making a decision and sticking by it is probably one of the biggest lessons to learn from Attila. I start each lesson with a quote, and the quote in the book from Attila goes, "It takes less courage to criticize the decisions of others than to stand by your own." And I think that just speaks volumes that you have to make a decision. In a lot of cases, you don't have perfect information. You don't have all the information. You've got to take whatever you've got available at the time and make a decision, you know, using the best information available. And that doesn't mean you're not going to make mistakes. You know, every one of these leaders have made mistakes. And in my examples, I've made a ton of mistakes. But you learn from them. And not only being decisive in your action is, you know, weighing the pros and the cons and then acting on it, but also recognizing when you do make a mistake and not being afraid to reverse course and say, you know what, this isn't working. I have to come up with a different battle plan. And poor leaders are the opposite. They will stay with, you know, they're afraid of seeming weak or being perceived as being, you know, wishy-washy, but that's not the case. They'll stick and they'll dig in deeper when they make a mistake and try to force it to work when it clearly won't. Great leaders will recognize right away, yeah, I made a mistake. I got to react very quickly to fix it and come up with a new plan.
I like that. Be able to pivot and move smoothly into something else and to acknowledge, hey, this isn't working. I need to, again, the whole thing of being decisive. But go back to that quote for a second because, you know, I think about it with politics and with no matter who you're for, doesn't matter. What I see, you know, that was happening and has often happened through many campaigns is that they're criticizing one another. But the quote, I like that quote. Just give the quote again.
Sure. It takes less courage to criticize the decisions of others than to stand by your own.
Mm-hmm. The whole thing of, you know, standing by your own, right? And being able to get into the substance of what your decision is and, again, that decisiveness and focusing on you rather than on others, right?
You're exactly right, Margaret. And, you know, whether it's a business, whether it's politics, whether it's you know, with your kids. I mean, your kids, you can learn so much from your kids. If you make a decision and then you change the decision, or you keep, if you're too wishy-washy, that goes to the other extreme, and they learn from that. But if you do make a mistake, admit the mistake and say, hey, I was wrong, we're going to do it this way now, or, you know, solicit feedback. You know, it's amazing not only your employees, but people, kids and people in your family, you know, getting their feedback on decisions and, you know, what should we do next is kind of the biggest question. You know, one of the quotes or one of the lessons that is later on in the book from the leader of the Hells Angels is great leaders know they don't have all the answers. So you have to rely on other people. You have to have a trusted inner circle, if you will, that you can get feedback from, get different perspectives from. And in the case that we're talking about right here, when you have to reverse course, maybe you don't know what the next step is, but to know that we have to go and get that input from our trusted advisors and then use that as information to lead to, okay, here's our new course of action.
Right. No, that makes sense for sure. Well, we need to take a segment break. We're going to continue talking about these lessons that you've learned and how they can help us improve our leadership methods. So stay tuned for more Business Life Works. We'll be back with you in just a moment.
Did you know that more than 54% of Americans fight with people close to them because of stress? That people with positive social relationships recover from illness faster? And that people who have a best friend at work are 7 times more likely to be engaged in their jobs? The Relationship Code teaches us to empower ourselves in all types of relationships with the new techniques and insights of the 4-step harmonic matching process. The harmonic process integrates psychology with universal principles to help people achieve their desires. In the Relationship Code, you'll learn to create positive, self-fulfilling prophecies, communicate effectively, enhance relationships on the job, overcome everyday and long-term challenges, and develop extraordinary outcomes. Published by Career Press and available now, you can go to www.margaretmacraw.com or call 410-366-9111 to order the book. Are you interested in a board-certified coach training program specializing in the law of attraction? If so, become a board-certified life and business coach, as well as a holistic health practitioner, and help others live their dreams. If you're ready for a new and exciting career, you should visit www.tuneintolove.com to learn more about board-certified training programs specializing in the law of attraction. This could be perfect if you're one of those people that likes helping others. Do friends, family members, and colleagues come to you for advice? And are you good at helping others solve difficult problems? If so, this board-certified training program specializing in the law of attraction could be just for you. Go to tuneintolove.com to find out more. You could be your own boss and working out of your own home with a very flexible schedule, in addition to the ability to make so much more money and have so much more free time. Visit www.tuneintolove.com and find out more about the board-certified training program specializing in the law of attraction. Would you like to transcend patterns in your life that inhibit you from attracting true love? Begin creating strong, fulfilling relationships that are long-lasting. Margaret McCraw's book, Tune Into Love, can give you a positive start and an exciting new process for attracting the loving partner you seek. Tune Into Love will also teach you 4 essential steps for focusing your thoughts, emotions, and beliefs to create all of your desires. Learn how to sidestep the self-imposed roadblocks that hold you from fulfillment. In addition to attracting and creating a fulfilling relationship, Tune Into Love will show you how to attract better health, fulfilling careers, abundance of money, and harmony in all aspects of your life. Order your copy today at www.tuneintolove.com or call 877-366-9111 or visit the website tuneintolove.com.
Radio Your Way. HealthyLife.net.
This is Margaret McCraw, host of Business Life Works. Today we are talking with Steve Williams. And Steve, I'd like you just to give our listeners again the name of your book and your website, where they can find you, and if there's anything particular on your website you want to let them know about, feel free to do that now.
Sure. So the book's available on Amazon. It's available on Barnes & Noble through the publisher Atmosphere Press. But if you want an autographed copy, you can go to my website, which is Steve Williams Author, all one word, stevewilliamsauthor.com. And it's available in hardcover, paperback, an ebook through Amazon. There is a self-learning, online learning course that's about to be launched very quickly that'll be at the same website. You can also go to the website and contact me if you want to have one-on-one coaching or group or team coaching on leadership lessons. So stevewilliamsauthor.com is where you go to find all that stuff.
stevewilliamsauthor.com. Okay.
Correct.
Great. Wonderful. Okay, well, let's get into this a little bit more, the substance. If we were moving into your third chapter, I believe it's your third chapter, where you talk about leading from the front, why don't you give us the quote of the person you researched and talk a little bit about what you learned in terms of methods from that person?
Sure. So many people don't know the name Freydis Eric's daughter. She was a Viking, what they called, women Vikings were called shield maidens. And unless you watched any of the Valhalla television series, you probably don't know who Freydis is, but she was a main character in most of those. And she was the illegitimate daughter of Eric the Red, and she grew up in the Viking family. The quote that I used from her is, it's kind of interesting. There's two lessons in here. One of them is, hand me an axe. So they were going into battle. She was pregnant. She had her own crew. They were just landed on Greenland, and they were in a battle with the natives, and they were, you know, about to go into a hotly contested, you know, deadly battle. And she was pregnant, and she wanted a weapon so she could go to the front of the line and lead her troop into battle. And I think that's kind of the way that great leaders become great, by being out in front. You know, walking the walk and leading by example. So, you know, would you rather work for, you know, I think all of us have had good bosses and bad bosses. And if you would poll 10 people and ask them, would you rather work for somebody that just sits in a corner office and barks out orders to you, or somebody that comes out and works side by side next to you, I think 10 out of 10 people would take the latter. And I think that's what that whole lesson means, is if you're not willing to do the work yourself, how can you expect those that you're trying to influence and lead to want to do the work? So, you know, get your hands dirty. Lead from the front. You know, be out there working with them side by side, understanding their, you know, what's working for them and listening to them on what doesn't work, because they're the subject matter experts on whatever it is that, you know, that they're working on. So leading by example, showing them that, hey, I got your back, I'm going to go first. Anything goes wrong, I'm going to take the hit. If something goes wrong, I'll take responsibility. If we're successful, you get the credit. I mean, those are all part of the whole thing as far as leading from the front. So she was a great example. I mean, first she was a woman, in a, you know, not unlike, you know, today, she was a woman in a man's industry. The Vikings were mostly men. She was also one of the fiercest Viking of, you know, just about anybody outside of her family. You know, Eric the Red was her dad. Leif Erikson was her half-brother. So she grew up going on missions with them and learning how they, you know, led these, some of the most violent people in history, the Vikings, to be successful. What it took to keep these people under their control, what it took to get them to buy into the vision of, here's our plan, here's our long-term goals, here's where we want to be in 5 years, and this is the territories that we want to occupy. She got a hands-on, day-to-day training from two of the best Vikings in history, and she became known as, you know, probably, well, at least the most famous and highest leading woman Viking, but also she was up there with, you know, any of the other male Vikings as far as what she had accomplished and how successful she was. So she had her own legacy.
Wow, interesting. And, you know, as you're talking, I'm thinking today leadership has changed so much, particularly in the last 4 years, since COVID, since everybody went virtual. Mm-hmm. People are working from their homes. They're more isolated. Staff meetings are, you know, conference calls or Zoom calls. You know, it's a very different world than it was 4 years ago. And so even for leaders, we all have to be able to do these things, you know, and have it be visible to people who report to us, walking the walk, leading by example. Things that were maybe more obvious when you, lots of people do work in an office. A lot of people are returning to offices. But there are still so many where the work is virtual, and people tend to go their own way, is what I've experienced. And it really does take extra effort to even demonstrate that you are walking the walk, that you are, to show them that you're leading by example and not have people in their own world not having the opportunity to see that, to have the mentoring or the coaching. Again, some of that's done obviously over the phone or, you know, through these online platforms, but it's a different way of leading for sure.
It is, and you're right. It's changed not only the leadership portion, but how we work. And I think that there were some good things that came out of the whole COVID era, and there were some bad things. And leadership is certainly one that it makes it more difficult to demonstrate, like you said, how am I leading by example when I'm looking at 20 people that work for me on a screen, on a Zoom call. You have to change. We talked about earlier adaptability. Well, that's one way leaders have had to adapt, is how can I maintain that same and do it in an online virtual format versus a face-to-face format. And
We have to take a second break, Steve. We're going to be back in just a moment with Steve Williams talking about leadership and notorious leadership. All right, stay tuned. We'll be back.
Are you interested in a board-certified coach training program specializing in the law of attraction? If so, become a board-certified life and business coach, as well as a holistic health practitioner, and help others live their dreams. If you're ready for a new and exciting career, you should visit www.tuneintolove.com to learn more about board-certified training programs specializing in the law of attraction. This could be perfect if you're one of those people that likes helping others. Do friends, family members, and colleagues come to you for advice? And are you good at helping others solve difficult problems? If so, this board-certified training program specializing in the law of attraction could be just for you. Go to tuneintolove.com to find out more. You could be your own boss and working out of your own home with a very flexible schedule, in addition to the ability to make so much more money and have so much more free time. Visit www.tuneintolove.com and find out more about the board-certified training program specializing in the law of attraction.
For all your live or pre-recorded webcasting needs, come to earthchannel.com. Get your web-based message out to a select group or the whole world. It's easy. A pioneer in webcasting, earthchannel.com provides the best products and services to big corporations and government users. And now, this same technology is available to you. They have the best earthcast encoders, servers, and products to meet your technical needs. But wait, don't want to mess with technical stress? No problem. They'll do it for you. EarthChannel.com is your answer. You can use webcasting for lots of things, like advertising, marketing, customer support, training, and don't forget, web radio and TV. In fact, you're listening to a live Earthcast right now, so come to EarthChannel.com. Actualize your audio or video webcasting needs today. You can't beat the friendly service or the price. Call EarthChannel.com at 800-849-8978. That's 800-849-8978.
Expanding your mind. HealthyLife.net.
This is Margaret McCaw, host of Business Life Works. We are here today talking with Steve Williams, and we are talking about his book called Notorious, Leadership Lessons from History's Most Notorious Leaders. Steve's website is stevewilliamsauthor.com. And Steve had mentioned earlier you can buy his book wherever books are sold, but if you'd like an autographed copy, then go to his website and purchase the book from his website. So, Steve, let's go forward and talk about the next leader that you studied, Genghis Khan, on some of his superior tactics. And I know in your book you talk about shattering the status quo, and you talk about building the right team. We talked about teamship earlier with Sun Tzu. So please, let's talk a little bit about what you learned from Genghis Khan, and if you have a quote, I'd love to hear the quote.
Sure. So the Genghis Khan quote goes, just as God gave different fingers to the hand, so has he given different ways to men. So what
so
I
is he given different ways to what?
To men.
To men?
Men, M-E-N, yes.
Okay, oh, to men. Okay, got it.
Yes, yes. So what I take away from that is that there's more than one way to skin the cat, basically. So Genghis Khan was one of the greatest military strategists and one of the first that combined technology with cunning warfare tactics to outthink his enemies. And he didn't really rely on overpowering them. He more relied on outthinking them. And in many cases, many battles were won without even having a battle, either through his reputation or one of the things that he was famous for is psychological warfare. And, you know, you think about, he lived in, the first and second century. So back then, thinking about psychological warfare, it really took me by surprise that some of the things that he employed to gain a mental edge on his enemies were definitely, shattering the status quo. Back then, it was about who had the biggest army, who had the best weapons, who had, who had the most overpowering force. Where he took a different tact and said, I'm going to go after it and try to win as many battles without anybody dying as I can. If it comes to violence, it comes to violence. But I would rather avoid taking the violent approach versus taking a peaceful approach. And, he had some techniques that were very, very, out of the box, if you will. When he would be approaching an enemy, he would have every one of his warriors, who were all on horseback, drag very heavy objects behind them. So from a great distance, they would create these huge dust storms, which made it look like his army was five or six times the size of what it actually was.
Oh,
and by
God.
The time they got to the enemy had basically surrendered. It was no accident that he did these things, because He wanted to become so feared that people would often surrender before the battle even began.
So he'd have them drag. Yeah. What were they dragging exactly?
Heavy objects, whether it's a log or a rock or something else, something that would create a big dust storm behind a single horse. So if he had 1,000 warriors and they all were dragging these large objects behind the horse, you know, from a distance, the enemy would think, my God, he's got 10,000 warriors coming at me, when he really didn't. It made his force, you know, multiply in the minds of the opposition. So it created a perception that they were much larger than they actually were.
Wow. That's
He would also have every one of his soldiers, they would drill very small holes in their arrows. And, of course, they did a lot of things with swords and bow and arrow. And when they would fire their arrows in the air, they would whistle. And the opposing, you know, armies would hear it before they even saw the arrows. And it kind of scared the crap out of them. So that was another way that he got in their heads before the troops even arrived. They would do that at a great distance. You know, their archers would fire their arrows and land over into the other, the enemy's army. And they would be frightened by the sound, and then all of a sudden the arrows started hitting them, and it would just terrify them. He also, like I said, like Sun Tzu, he wasn't afraid to learn and capitalize on strategies that his enemies would employ. So he would learn from them. If you look at today's business environment, a lot of times, you know, somebody from a competitor comes into your organization, management feels like they know, you know, their way is the best way, right? And they don't really want to understand what made the other company successful. Well, he wasn't that way. He wanted to learn from whatever source it came from. If it made him a better leader and if it made his army more successful, he would learn from wherever that source came from. And again, he would have no hesitation in promoting one general from somebody that he had just captured into a leadership position within his own army. So he was able to get them to buy into his vision, embrace his strategy, and then become a disciple.
See, we have to move on a little bit or we won't get through everybody.
Sure.
This is fascinating. But again, people can get your book to learn more about it. It's certainly tempting to, you know, learn more because this is so interesting. Let's talk a little bit about Blackbeard, the pirate, on branding and then making perception your reality. We have just about a minute or two to talk about Blackbeard.
Sure. Well, I think there's a couple of quotes from the Blackbeard area, and they're not from Blackbeard himself. They're from somebody that studied Blackbeard because of the timing and the documentation from that time period. But one quote is, a pirate, just like a normal person, would probably rather not have killed somebody. But pirates knew that if a person resisted them and they didn't do something about it, their reputation and thus their brand would be impaired. So Blackbeard was all about branding. You know, and if you think about it, there's a couple of brands that have survived the centuries. One of them is Coca-Cola. Another one is Blackbeard's skull and crossbones flag. And to this day, universally worldwide, people know that if they see that symbol, it means something bad. And that's what Blackbeard wanted people to see from the flag of his ships coming toward them that he was trying to breach and take over, is that this was Blackbeard and they really didn't stand a chance of resisting him. So that's a brand that's survived, like I said, the centuries, that is still used today. And
that's pretty amazing, really. That's pretty amazing. We have to take a segment break, though. We're going to have to, unfortunately, move on from Blackbeard on to Catherine the Great when we come back. So stay tuned for more Business Life Works. We're here today with Steve Williams.
Are you interested in a board-certified coach training program specializing in the law of attraction? If so, become a board-certified life and business coach, as well as a holistic health practitioner, and help others live their dreams. If you're ready for a new and exciting career, you should visit www.tuneintolove.com to learn more about board-certified training programs specializing in the law of attraction. This could be perfect if you're one of those people that likes helping others. Do friends, family members, and colleagues come to you for advice? And are you good at helping others solve difficult problems? If so, this board-certified training program specializing in the law of attraction could be just for you. Go to tuneintolove.com to find out more. You could be your own boss and working out of your own home with a very flexible schedule, in addition to the ability to make so much more money and have so much more free time. Visit www.tuneintolove.com and find out more about the board-certified training program specializing in the law of attraction.
For all your live or pre-recorded webcasting needs, come to earthchannel.com. Get your web-based message out to a select group or the whole world. It's easy. A pioneer in webcasting, earthchannel.com provides the best products and services to big corporations and government users. And now, this same technology is available to you. They have the best earthcasting coders, servers, and products to meet your technical needs. But wait, don't want to mess with technical stress? No problem. They'll do it for you. EarthChannel.com is your answer. You can use webcasting for lots of things, like advertising, marketing, customer support, training, and don't forget, web radio and TV. In fact, you're listening to a live Earthcast right now, so come to EarthChannel.com. Actualize your audio or video webcasting needs today. You can't beat the friendly service or the price. Call EarthChannel.com at 800-849-8978. That's 800-849-8978.
Would you like to transcend patterns in your life that inhibit you from attracting true love? Begin creating strong, fulfilling relationships that are long-lasting. Margaret McCraw's book, Tune Into Love, can give you a positive start and an exciting new process for attracting the loving partner you seek. Tune Into Love will also teach you four essential steps for focusing your thoughts, emotions, and beliefs to create all of your desires. Learn how to sidestep the self-imposed roadblocks that hold you from fulfillment. In addition to attracting and creating a fulfilling relationship, Tune Into Love will show you how to attract better health, fulfilling careers, abundance of money, and harmony in all aspects of your life. Order your copy today at www.tuneintolove.com or call 877-366-9111 or visit the website TuneIntoLove.com.
Expanding your mind. HealthyLife.net.
This is Margaret McCraw, host of Business Life Works. We're here today with Steve Williams talking about leadership and what he's learned from notorious leaders. So his book is called Notorious: Leadership Lessons from History's Most Notorious Leaders. You can get his book wherever books are sold, but you can also go to his website to get a signed copy or to learn more about Steve's leadership consulting work. His website is stevewilliamsauthor.com. So, Steve, we left off with talking about, quickly went through Blackbeard. So let's take about 2 minutes to talk about the last three chapters and give our listeners a taste of what you're doing with this wonderful book. And then I would encourage anybody who's interested in leadership or improving their own leadership skills personally or professionally to get your book. Catherine the Great, you talk about her in terms of keys to success. And her lessons was focus on what you control and working hard. Do you have a quote from Catherine?
I do.
Okay.
One of the two quotes from Catherine is, don't worry about things you cannot alter. And I think that's so important because one of the things that people, we talk about burnout, and a big portion of burnout is anxiety over things that may or may not happen. And what's interesting in the research, she was very focused. She knew what she wanted. She had a plan, and she worked hard to get there. One of the things that came up that I found really supported this is statistics on what people worry about show that 40% never happened, 30% have already happened, 22% are needless or petty, and only 8% actually happen. And out of that 8%, only 4% are within some level of the control of the person. So it really drives home the point that don't waste time and energy worrying about things that you really have no control over. Focus on what you can control and do the best you can at making those things happen.
Okay. Interesting. That's a great lesson. And I'm trying to think of that little book that came out years. Don't sweat the small stuff. That would kind of summarize Catherine, wouldn't it?
I've read that, and that's exactly what she's talking about.
There you go. Okay. So let's talk about Napoleon, okay? Napoleon Bonaparte on visionary leadership. His lessons that you have addressed in the book is cultivate buy-in to your vision. This is something that every MBA program talks about, is buy-in to your vision. It's part of team building. It's part of just being able to activate your intentions. And then also Napoleon addressed adjusting to the situation. So that goes back to what you talked about earlier. I'm trying to remember which leader it was, but being able to pivot very quickly.
Right, right, exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
So let's talk about him. What would you like to tell us? And if you have a quote, we'll take it.
Sure. So the quote from Napoleon, one of the two quotes is, a leader is a dealer in hope. And if you look at, you know, my consulting business is all about change. I go into a company, I assess their current situation, and we come up with a plan on whatever we're trying to get accomplished. And the key is this exact lesson. You've got to have buy-in to the vision. And you can't, you know, what happens with a lot of consultants is they'll go into a company, they'll do the assessment, and they'll say, okay, here's what you need to do. I'm going to give it to you. It's a canned, you know, step one, step two, step three, step four. Go execute it, and you'll get there. And 9 out of 10 times, that method fails, because they have not got the buy-in from not only management, but the actual people out on the shop floor or performing the service to buy into why are we making these changes, and they had no input into it. The lesson here is you've got to engage the people that actually do the work in the change. You've got to get their input. They've got to get some skin in the game and feel that, you know, I was a part of this. There, you know, the success rate when an employee or a department feels like they had input into creating and crafting the change. Here's the new way we're going to do things. They're going to be ambassadors of the change, and it's exponential. I mean, they're going to get other people to buy in as well. So I think that, you know, and that's how Napoleon led. He led by not demanding and forcing something down his troops' throats. He got them to voluntarily buy into his vision, got their input, used their input in a lot of cases to develop the plan, and everybody kind of was in it together. And that is so powerful and so strong when you're trying to make a change. And, you know, leadership, to quote John Maxwell, who is the group that I certified with, he's the foremost leadership expert in the world,
mm-hmm.
He says leadership is influence. Nothing more, nothing less. So you can't force people to do things. You can in the short term, but in the long term, they've got to want to be led. They've got to want to follow your vision. They've got to want to follow your plan. And to do that, they've got to buy into it. They've got to agree. They've got to say, hey, you know what? I had some input into this. Some of this is you know, some of my ideas. So that's exactly what that quote means. That's exactly what Napoleon was talking about when he talked about some of his successes, was getting his troops to buy into his vision by getting them engaged in the process. So
that,
I think that's a powerful lesson.
That makes sense. Yeah, go ahead.
No, that was it. That's a powerful lesson.
It's a very powerful lesson. I'm thinking of various leaders in my life, and the key, the foundation to that, even before I think the buy-in, is being able to respect the person bringing you together, respect the person who wants your buy-in. And I guess if you think about it, asking your opinion, getting your input, then doing something with it is part of building respect.
Absolutely.
If you don't do that, then people feel angry, left out, put down. So really, I'm just processing this a little bit with you, but the whole respect is foundation to this, and I'm just thinking that really the buy-in piece is probably, you know, the whole thing of asking and soliciting and engaging people, but then doing something with it, because you can, I've been in organizations where leaders have asked for things and then input, but then they do nothing with it, and that infuriates people.
It sure does, and this particular lesson hit home with me because when I first started my leadership journey at an early age, I was very autocratic. You know, it was, I thought I knew everything. It was my way or the highway. That doesn't work.
I make a
point in a book in a couple of places that there's a big difference between a manager and a leader, right? A manager, you know, gets things done. A leader does the right thing. And the leaders have to have people that are willing to follow them, not forced to follow them. And that's what separates the two.
Mm-hmm. And that's all part of building respect, isn't it?
It certainly is.
Yeah. We have to wrap up. Al Capone was your last one on building a successful organization, knowing what your customers want, and streamlining your business. We don't really have time to get into it. If you have a quote you want to give us, we have like 5 seconds to do that. If you don't, that's fine. We can just wrap. Why don't we just wrap up and give our listeners your website again, and they can buy your book to learn more about what Al Capone's lessons were. So buy the book for that we are talking about. You can go to stevewilliamsauthor.com, his website, get a signed copy of his book, or you can go to any place where books are sold to get the book Notorious, Leadership Lessons from History's Most Notorious Leaders. I want to thank you, Steve, for being on my show today. This has been fascinating, very interesting. What a great approach to leadership. And stay in touch with me and let me know what else you're doing and what other books you have, okay?
I appreciate it, and I appreciate the opportunity, Margaret. I will definitely keep in touch, and I've researched a bunch of the other things that you're doing, and I'm a fan, so I will definitely be staying in touch.
Sounds great. Thank you so much, Steve. And to my listeners, I'll see you next month.